The job and the jobless.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The unemployment line still high. People still collecting checks, not quite as many. And the Treasury Secretary's got a job today, and he's earning his paycheck on Capitol Hill. But our investors? Where's Wall Street? The S&P 500 up about a tenth of a percent right now. NASDAQ down about a half a percent. The Dow flat. European markets are mixed, and in Asia, shares were lower by a percent or more. We got word this morning from the Labor Department that first-time jobless claims rose about 3,000 last week, but continuing claims came down for the first time in at least 5 months. We're going to talk with Doug Foreman right now, who's with Highmark Capital. He joins us live from San Francisco. Hi, Doug.
Good morning, Steve.
So for 21 weeks in a row, the number of people staying on unemployment went higher and higher, most of those record highs. But today the government said that number fell. Are you surprised?
Yeah, we are a little bit surprised that it's falling this early. But, you know, I guess in retrospect, initial jobless claims, as you pointed out, they actually peaked a couple months ago. The economy is creating jobs. So the number of people that are collecting unemployment checks is starting to fall, which is good news.
So here comes the recovery, right?
Well, I think, you know, unemployment is usually, unfortunately, one of the last things to recover in a recovery. So we're not holding out high hopes that, you know, that number is going to disappear anytime soon or get down to levels that would be more acceptable. But, you know, we do think the economy is in a bottoming process.
Big job today for Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner on the Hill trying to sell the Obama administration's financial regulation overhaul. Now, if I'm Tim Geithner, Doug, what's my strategy to get Congress on board?
Well, I think the strategy has to be that this is the most reasonable proposal that they can put forward, one that doesn't regulate the financial industry out of business, which wouldn't do anybody any good, but also does a lot more than do nothing. It is a comprehensive overhaul, which is obviously necessary.
All right. Doug Foreman, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve. All right.
Speaking of financial regulations in Europe, the EU is taking up the same issue at a summit. It starts today in Brussels. Our European correspondent, Stephen Beard, is with us now from London to talk about the proposals over there. Hello, Stephen.
Hi, Steve.
So what is the EU discussing?
Well, one of the key things they'll be talking about are the exact powers of two proposed EU-wide regulatory bodies. These are, on the one hand, the European Systemic Risk Board, which would be set up to spot ahead of time the kind of credit problems that blew up into the credit crunch. And on the other hand, the other body, the European System of Financial Supervisors, would have the job of monitoring individual banks and financial firms to make sure they're not engaging in over-risky behavior. The key question under discussion today is who's going to run these bodies and will these bodies be able to override and overrule national governments in the EU?
Now, Stephen, the UK not too keen on these proposals. What's the tension about with the Brits?
Well, the problem is London, which is Europe's major financial centre. Many people in the city of London believe that continental Europeans have long resented the success of London as a financial centre. They feel the French and the Germans and the bureaucrats in Brussels are keen to get their hands on London, bring it to heel, take it down a peg or two. And so the British government is under a lot of pressure to ensure that London, which is a major source of employment and tax revenue for the UK, isn't hamstrung by EU-wide regulation.
All right. Our man in London, Stephen Beard, joining us this morning. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Thursday, June 18th, 2009 at marketplace.org. The Democratic chairman of the House Transportation Committee will release plans today to remake the U.S. transportation system. But Jim Oberstar's ambitions are slamming into economic reality. A fight is brewing between the congressman and the Obama administration over a big highway bill. From Washington, here's Marketplace's Steve Henn.
The bad economy and high gas prices have meant Americans are driving less. That means the feds are hauling in less revenue from the federal gas tax, so much less the Highway Trust Fund will go broke this August. Congressman Oberstar wants to use this crisis to force Congress to make tough choices about how to fund transportation, possibly hiking the gas tax or creating a new system that uses GPS technology to tax Americans based on how much they actually drive. The Minnesota Democrat wants to spend billions more for public transit and $50 billion in the next 6 years on high-speed rail. But the Obama administration's leery of a vote that hikes taxes before next year's midterm elections, so it's offering a plan to temporarily patch the highway funding pothole and push off any big decisions for at least 18 months. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Americans are learning to live with tight credit. Suddenly, it's harder to finance that new car or flat-screen television. But in other parts of the world, stingy banks have been a way of life for years. In Mexico, people have developed a workaround. From the America's Desk at WLRN, here's Marketplace's Dan Gretsch.
Mexico's answer to tight credit is called a tanda.
A tanda is a revolving, informal credit association.
That's economist Stephen Haber with the Hoover Institution at Stanford University.
Imagine a small entrepreneur who needs a $1,000 loan. He joins a tanda, which has 10 members. Everybody pays in $100 per week. Person who is the first in line gets $1,000 at that week until everybody has received $1,000.
And no one pays interest. Tandas are used by working-class Mexicans to pay for things they otherwise couldn't afford. Secretary Mirna Tames needed a few hundred dollars to fix up her bedroom closet. She knew she'd never manage to scrape the money together on her own. So she gathered 9 co-workers and started a tanda.
A tanda is better than a bank loan because you're obligated to set aside money each month. You made a promise to other people, and they made a promise to you.
People who've received their lump sum pay it back by continuing to contribute to the tanda. The risk is someone who's already collected could decide to stop paying. Unlike a bank loan, there are no debt collectors or credit scores with a tanda. But there is a cost to not paying up. Otón Ruiz Montemayor is the former head of the Mexican bank Banorte.
If you don't pay a tanda, everybody, either in the neighborhood or in the family or in the community where you do your small business, will know. So you are out of the system.
In societies with close social ties, there's less risk of someone bilking the other investors. In any case, tandas raise relatively small amounts of money. For centuries, credit associations like tandas have been used around the world, in Africa, in Asia, in the Caribbean, and more recently, in the United States. Undocumented immigrants who otherwise couldn't get a loan can borrow money to start a small business using a tanda. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
You may have heard the term target date fund being thrown around in the investment lexicon. It's a type of 401k account where things get a little more conservative the closer you get to your particular retirement date. Conservative isn't safer. But some of those safer nest eggs still lost a lot of their value when the economy tanked. And today, federal regulators want to know why. Here's Marketplace's Bob Moon.
When a Senate committee looked at target funds for those retiring in 2010, it found widely varying exposure to stocks. Mercer Bullard heads the advocacy group Fund Democracy. He says investors are being misled.
If you call something a 2010 fund and create an expectation, it's not going to have more than about 50% in stocks. That's just wrong, and you need to prohibit that from happening.
Vanguard, on the other hand, argues that retirement investors who don't go with target funds actually make riskier choices. And Vanguard's John Amricks says whenever stocks fall as much as they did, some losses, even in these funds, are unavoidable.
I think it's a leap, a very big leap, to assume that that means there would be no risk. Everything that's said about target date funds emphasizes they're not guaranteed.
Amricks insists target funds remain a fair and simple option for investors who need help diversifying, but Bullard complains there are no rules to limit how risky these funds can actually be.
Which resulted in the defrauding of a lot of investors whose lives have been substantially changed and in some cases ruined.
Federal regulators say they're looking into whether more needs to be done to better align the makeup of these funds with the expectations of investors. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Never mind the first day of summer is this Sunday. It's impossible to think vacation if you can't even get a day off. As many as 30 million American workers don't get any paid vacation from their workplace. And some in Congress want to change that. Here's Marketplace's John Dimsdale.
In the House of Representatives, Democrat Alan Grayson represents Orlando, Florida, home to theme parks and other holiday destinations.
Listen, anybody who lives in Orlando understands that vacationing people are happy people. They're all around us.
Grayson is the sponsor of the Paid Vacation Act, Under his proposal, companies with more than 100 workers would have to give everyone they've employed for more than a year a week's paid vacation. Grayson says time off is good for business.
Study after study has shown that people who go on vacations end up being healthier and more productive when they get back from the vacation. And we need a workforce that is paying attention, motivated, and part of that is to have a workforce that doesn't always feel tired.
Companies aren't convinced. Keith Smith with the National Association of Manufacturers says his members support and provide paid leave, but he says this is the wrong economy for another government mandate.
Additional burdens and costs, especially at a time like we're currently undergoing, where manufacturers are struggling to retain and create jobs, that is not the best time to burden manufacturers with yet another cost of government compliance.
Employers may be feeling a little overwhelmed by a flurry of bills in Congress mandating paid leave for workers, not just for vacations, but also for family emergencies and illness. At a hearing last week on the various proposals, Deborah Ness of the National Partnership for Women and Families said nearly half of all private sector workers don't get any paid sick days.
The Healthy Families Act would help us significantly reduce the spread of pandemic or seasonal flu by enabling workers to comply with public health advice if they or their family members show sign of illness.
But Georgia Republican Representative Tom Price worries that the cost of providing government-mandated benefits will be passed on to workers through reduced wages and fewer jobs.
At the very moment when Americans are worried about losing their job, this proposal undercuts job creation through higher employer costs.
So far, none of the bills have moved beyond the talking stage. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
So, how much vacation do you get? Do you get time off at all? Maybe you don't have a job at all. Share your thoughts with us at our website, marketplace.org. Check out the Scratch Pad with our online host and blogger, Scott J. Gow, inside the website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Thursday.
American Public Media.